Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings from Roberta's and the Heritage Radio Network station here in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn. Judy McGuire is out on assignment this week again. And I always say out on assignment, which is, of course, complete bullshit. She's out getting loaded. But when I used to watch 60 Minutes, and does anybody even watch 60 Minutes anymore?
Yeah.
Is it even relevant anymore, 60 Minutes? But I figured they'd say, oh, Leslie Stahl's, you know, out on assignment. I just figured she was too fucked up to make it to work that week. Anyway, Judy's not here. I'm flying solo. And our guest today, we're going to have a real TV party today. This is like... this is good. We're going to get a little drunk. We're going to talk about everybody's favorite diversion. Don't even pretend you people read books. We're talking about television today, the boob tube. I'm here with Kira Bolenick, executive director at Dame Magazine, and she has written about television and many, many other things for New York Magazine, and you can find her at Vulture.com. And today, in the New York Times book review, reviewing Sheila Weller's new book, The News Sorority, about women in the news business. And your review was fantastic. Hi, Kira. Well,
thank you. Hi, I'm good. How are you?
This is good. I'm so glad you're here today. This is,
me too.
We're like new friends. We met on Facebook. We're like a real Facebook success story, you and I.
It's true. A platonic love story.
Well, your review was great. And since it's happening, it's now and it's today. And the New York Times book review, that's a pretty fucking major league venue.
I know. I was really excited.
I was excited to read it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and how you found yourself reviewing this book?
You know, they just cold called me. I was so...
Really?
Yeah. I used to review books for a living, like two or three a week. And I was on the NBCC board in the early aughts. And then after a while, I just sort of hit the wall. And started reviewing television because I just had to come, you know, I didn't have a come to Jesus moment because I'm Jewish, but I just had to be honest with myself that that's what I did a lot.
I think it's great because I know you as a TV writer and a TV aficionado, and now you're reviewing books, and I'm like, fuck, I have to confront this great intellect, and I had already pigeonholed you as someone who watches TV.
No, I do, and for 10 years, I interviewed writers for Book Forum.
Ooh la la. It's pretty rarefied air, too, Book Forum.
Yeah, no, I love Book Forum. And then I just took a breather. And so the Times came to me and asked me to review this book. And I was so happy because I really, you know, I love books. I wanted to get back into it. This was a sort of perfect bridge because it was TV. It was a book about television. So it seemed the perfect.
And a book about strong women in television.
Yeah.
And just reading the review, I can imagine like how rough it must have been for the principals of that book. And it's such an old boys network.
Well, this certainly underlined that fact. I mean, you know, and Sheila Weller makes this really great point that they would fabricate these, well, it would not, maybe not always fabricate these, but they certainly brought a lot of attention to catfights among the women when they were going on between them, you know, among the men, like Dan Rather was.
I get that he is probably a prick and a backstabbing.
Oh, they all are. Peter Jennings
too. But he's Canadian. He should be. Canadians are nice people.
Well, I think it's just the way the industry is set up. You kind of have to be an asshole.
Yeah. But Brian Williams seems like a nice guy. Of course, this isn't really about that era. He's
I did not get the impression that he was such an asshole.
He slow jams the news.
He slow jams the news, exactly.
And he's really charming.
Yeah, he is. He is. I mean, you know, anyone who can make fun of themselves. I don't think that these other guys made fun of themselves all that much.
Dan Rather always seemed like a completely humorless dude.
Yeah, but you never, you know, until recently, you never heard about those stories the way you heard about Katie Couric. Like, Katie certainly was in the tabs all the time.
Constantly.
But, you know, the person who has the most compelling narrative, I think, in this book is Diane Sawyer. She's a really fascinating individual.
More so than Christina Amanpour?
Christina Amanpour actually was the most surprising individual because her life is very different from the person that you see on
the front lines. She seems to always, when I see her on TV, has a lot of gravitas. Like,
yes.
Like, if it's coming from her, I seem to trust it. I mean, it has to do a little bit of her backstory and who she is. But, you know, I hate to say it, unlike almost every other, you know, woman I see on TV, she is obviously not there for her looks. I mean, she is just doesn't look like a typical American, you know, blue-eyed TV presenter. I mean, she's just not cut from that cloth. And, you know, whether
why it was hard for her to get in front of the camera in the first place.
I mean, hard for her because people just...
Because she looks like Mick Jagger, which I love about her. But, you know, the thing that's so important about her is that she got she got people's attention on wars that Americans weren't paying attention to, like Kosovo and Rwanda. She's bold. I mean, she was on the front lines. But interestingly, was not a strong academic and went to University of Rhode Island, but was so sort of a social climber and hung out exclusively with her brown friends. And specifically, her best friend was John F. Kennedy Jr. And those were the people she hung with. And was very socially conscious. And also, another thing that Sheila Weller brought up was that she was kind of an embellisher. She liked to tell these little stories about herself, self-mythologizing.
Well, why, you know, as a news person, as a journalist myself, I would never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Right, exactly. But you would never expect this of her because she also has done so much for women and children in need by using her journalism as such an important tool. I mean, she's incredible at it. She's not a good anchor person. She's not really good at... she's not a great, I should say, interviewer, the way that Katie Couric and Diane Sawyer...
Well, Katie's famous for her interviews. Diane Sawyer as well.
They're very talented at it. And that really comes out in this book, the way that they can draw a person out, whether they are a grieving mother or a celebrity or a major world leader. And that was really interesting, I thought, in this book.
I remember, I don't watch the evening news. I don't know anybody who actually watches network evening
news. Well, not anymore.
Although I'm always surprised when I go over someone's house, like, oh, let's watch the news at 6 o'clock. Like, you know, I mean,
our parents' generation.
That's our parents' generation. And before, so the 6 o'clock news. So I'm always surprised. And I guess Katie Couric became the anchor woman of CBS News?
Which
quickly tanked. But I always associated it with like daytime television and the magazine format.
Well, it's the news magazine that's really interesting because that's where the big stories are.
Which is where we started. I mean, does anybody even watch 60 Minutes anymore? I mean, it turned into like kind of an entertainment vehicle. I mean, when I was a kid, 60 Minutes was like, wow, it was like the ultimate middle brow TV show because middle brow in this case meaning it made people feel smarter than they actually are.
Yeah.
Kind of like listening to Frank Zappa.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, oh, look, I'm watching 60 Minutes, therefore I'm smart. It's kind of like reading a book. You know, look, it's Mike Walls. He's so serious.
And, yeah.
You know, but then it sort of like turned into like doing celebrity profiles more and more.
Well, it's all turned into that on television.
CBS News Division. Well, this is where we started, talking about news and women on news. But let's talk about our favorite TV shows. We have a lot of catching up to
do. Yes, yes, yes.
You and me. Okay, I power watched Transparent. Do you say power watch or do you say binge watch?
I don't tend to say binge watch, but I guess that's an accurate statement. I just power through. It's not that I power. It's just that, you know, I remember when Portlandia did a segment on this couple who they started with Battlestar Galactica, they were only going to watch one, and then it turned into three, and then it's...
Next thing you know... You know,
their electricity's turned off, and that was so true. But that was back with the DVDs.
But that's the way we watch TV now.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty. I mean, I see... See, you say binge watch, it makes me sound like I have an eating disorder.
Yeah.
But when I say power watch, it's like, I am awesome for doing this.
Exactly. Well, it's, you know, the way that television is structured now, and I know everyone talks about this, is, you know, they're very narrative... And they're
also, soap operas. The soap operas caught non.
Well, they're like novels.
Thinking people.
Yeah, I mean they're like novels, and they're like a delicious book, and you just like from The Sopranos on, and you just want to, you know, I'm just going to read one more chapter, and the next thing you know, you've been up all night reading a book. Well, that's how a lot of frustrated novelists or not frustrated novelists went out to L.A. and started writing these stories, and they're not ready to say goodbye to a character. You know, so they're continuous.
Okay. So in other words, it makes us feel smart, actually, yes. Like a book. You see, I never
thought. But they are really well-drawn characters.
No, they're well-drawn characters. No, but it's been well said, well talked about, anyway, that we are in some sort of, âge d'or of television.
Yeah.
Maybe starting with The Sopranos, mm-hmm. and this sort of, continuity narrative-based stuff. It's not, it's not Dallas, it's not Dynasty, sort of adult soap operas. I mean, it's something... that's got some depth to it, literary character and well-drawn characters. And I love The Sopranos.
Yeah, I mean, I actually watched it again about 2 years ago, and it really...
Are you from New Jersey?
I went to school in New Jersey.
I knew you went to Rutgers.
Yes, I'm actually from Chicago.
Oh, you're from Chicago.
Yeah. Because
The Sopranos, that's the real dirty jurors.
Yeah, that is.
That's the 201.
It actually took me 2 episodes to kind of be able to understand Gandolfini-ese, to understand Tony... get into his dialect.
Yeah, the Jersey mob.
Yeah.
Of course, being in Chicago, you're not.
I have Chicago mob. I know. I went to school with a lot of Chicago mob kids.
Oh.
I did. They retired to my suburb, or they wanted to send their kids to the school I went to. So I'm honestly not exaggerating when I say I went to school with a lot of those kids.
I knew, actually, I used to run with some of the Jersey mob in Jersey City. We knew some of these people that used to hang out at the My Way Lounge. Harry the Hat and Bobby Hairdo.
Well, Tony,
let me tell you something. Like, I was a Goodfellas. The remarkable thing about Goodfellas is it's fucking true. It's so accurate. I knew these people, and this is the way these people are. It really is an unbelievable portrait. And I think The Sopranos, follows suit. It's incredible. I mean, I know those people in New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, Tony
Accardo.
That's
why it's true. And it's funny.
The head of the Chicago mob, Tony Accardo, the godfather, he moved to River Forest, Illinois, where I grew up. And I don't know why he moved there, but he did. He built a fortress about 4 blocks from my parents' house.
A fortress?
Yes. It was windowless in the front.
Oh, man.
It had awesome. There were all these rumors about it that turned out to be true, that there was a bowling alley and a swimming pool in the basement. And his grandson, Eric Kumaro, was actually a Miami Dolphin, but he was the star of our high school, team and all that stuff. And we went to school with these people, and so all of his close associates, if you will, they all went to, we grew up with these guys. And in fact, I just saw one of them, his successor just got arrested finally.
Finally.
Yeah.
Speaking of the mob, trying to make a segue for the mob, if you've been watching Boardwalk Empire, what are the shows? And it's great. We told you this, Power Watch, now that all the HBO stuff was on Amazon.
Yeah.
I mean, I gave up my cable TV. I unplugged.
Yeah, a lot of people have been doing that.
You're talking about Portlandia. I watched it on a handheld device. I watched it on my iPhone. I mean, okay, I have the same weird thrill of watching TV on my iPhone in bed. It was like when I was a kid and I used to read a comic book with a flashlight under the sheets. To me, it's sort of like the same, kind of like I'm getting away with something.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. I watched Portlandia entirely on my iPhone.
Oh, that's hysterical. You could just watch sketches, just curate.
Well, it doesn't have to be big. I mean, and I'm a guy who loves to go to the movies.
Yeah.
And I love big movies. I wish the Transformers were actually good, but that's what I want to see. I want to see, show me what $50 million looks like.
Yeah, exactly.
Blow my fucking mind. I saw Gravity in 3D several times.
Yeah.
I love Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, just blow my mind. I want to see a giant movie on the biggest screen possible.
Yeah.
I love to go to the Ziegfeld. I like just awesome. I want it loud. I like to get stoned and see Star Wars.
Yeah,
exactly. When I was 14, which is like, oh, you know, and I went to the NYU film school, but for me, it was never about film school, it was about movie school.
Yeah.
But now we're watching TV and I'm watching it on a 3-inch screen. I never thought I'd get there. And someone suggested to me that because everybody's watching stuff and watching it so quickly, and everybody's watching it on their portable devices and in computer screens, that production values don't need to be as flashy as they once were on TV. Of course, I also have a 50-inch TV screen in my house. And yet there I am watching
it's nice
on my
to have options.
But it's nice. I mean, like, we're talking about Orange is the New Black, which I watched a combination of on TV and on maybe on my iPad.
Yeah.
But I'm not looking at it because it's pretty.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it because it's compelling.
Yeah, it's, again, it great does, storytelling and great acting.
And it was good. Did you watch? I watched the second season pretty much in one continuous wave.
Yeah.
How do you think it held up, the first season?
I thought it was great. Lorraine Toussaint was the most terrifying and interesting villain I've seen in a long time. She was so compelling. That actress
Who did she play again?
She played V.
Mm-hmm.
She was very seductive. Every time you started to hate her, she did something that like kind of brought you back in.
And the backstory too that they were showing, which in this season
well, you didn't
showed everybody's backstory,
yeah,
so you could empathize with them a little bit more.
Yeah, and the thing about her character was you didn't realize how much you needed, how much you hated her until you the second to last episode when you found out what a horrible, like the depths of the of her horribleness. When you found out, I mean. Is it okay to spoil something at this point? Can we assume that everyone has seen
it? Yeah, spoiler alert.
Yeah, I mean, I hate when people get mad. They're like, hey, I didn't see last season. Well, sorry.
Yeah, at this point, we're talking about it.
Let's get on board here. When you find out what she did to it's not Tasty's brother, but like the you know, she basically fostered Tasty and this this young man, and how she set up his death, like how she's just quick to betray anybody, you know, the way she turned on this kid when she found out that he was starting his own business and was in, you know, was colluding with this cop. I mean, it was just the most despicable thing I've ever seen. And then you're like, wow, that was one of the more evil things. Like I would sooner hang out with Hannibal than
speaking of Hannibal, my favorite show. And I'll tell you, unlike Orange is the New Black and Portlandia we talked about, I mean, I was watching Hannibal on a week-to-week basis. I cannot wait for the next episode. And I think because of that, I have more retention of the whole storyline and the details, because I didn't watch the whole season in one, you know.
You can't.
Good ones. But Hannibal is the most beautifully produced. It is so gorgeous. The colors are amazing. The whole thing just looks so beautiful. I mean, it's eye candy, aside from just that it's just like so deliciously gory. And, you know, coming into it, you know who Hannibal is. You know what he's up to.
I can't believe that's on network television.
And the way they cherry-picked from the Hannibal legacy. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody knows Silence of the Lambs. Fewer people know Thomas Harris's other books.
Yeah.
The Red Dragon, which is an unbelievably good book, by the way. Like a really, really good pulp thriller. And then his later books, which are, I think it's just called Hannibal, I think was the book. It's just not a good book. And the movie Hannibal.
It was a terrible movie.
It's terrible.
I still saw it.
I think that was a Ridley Scott movie, right? Talk about a guy who's done some of the great movies of all time and then comes out with a sort of trek.
I was still compelled by it, but it really wasn't good. Silence of the Lambs is one of my favorite
stands up
movies. And you know, I remember when it came out, I saw it a little late. I was in college at the time, and I think the Jeffrey Dahmer story broke around that time, so you could not suspend disbelief. You couldn't, like, because it's something very similar was happening in the news.
It's creepy. It's really good. One thing, though, about Hannibal, I just want to say, so they're not picking it up again. We've watched two seasons, and it's not starting again until after the new year.
Yeah,
that's a long time between seasons, and I know in some of the HBO shows they did that, but that's an awful lot to ask of me.
Yeah.
I mean, as a viewer. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you're going to, like, leave me cold?
They did that last
long
time.
Yeah. And ask me to... Yeah, they did.
Well, they're treating it like, the, you know, like an AMC show or A&E show, I should say. You know, it's like, and they do it in 13 episodes at a time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been watching Sons of Anarchy. I feel a bit duped by the whole thing because I can't believe I'm still watching it. It's just...
I call it Sons of Menarchy.
It's compelling, but I'm at this point, I'm not even sure why I'm watching it, except I feel like I've started it, and now I have to finish it.
There's certain shows that you have to write up.
Katie Sagal is fantastic on it, but I don't know. I just feel like I'm going in a circle with this whole thing. But Hannibal really, really is special.
It is. The first season I felt like I could, like the violence, like, you know, was sort of the backdrop, and what I was really watching was a psychological thriller. So, you know, that the violence was, it was a procedural, but it really wasn't that you were really watching this head game between.
And it's developed wonderfully, the sort of like the tete-a-tete, the cat and mouse thing, this bromance between Will and Hannibal, which left us last season with Will, you know, trying to hold his intestines in while he was bleeding on the floor.
Yeah, it was getting a little hard, I have to say.
Have you been in that romance before?
It felt like that.
It's pretty hot.
It's hot and heavy. Yeah. I have felt... You know, metaphorically that way before, but I haven't gone that far, obviously, because I still have my intestines.
Speaking of horror, our favorite show, what we bonded over, American Horror Story.
Oh my God!
This is like the first season was good. I was really, really digging it.
Yeah.
And by the way, in retrospect, I went back and I watched it again. It was actually better than I remembered it to be. It's a little creepier and groovier than I. You know, it's a classic haunted house story, but this, what could
Asylum
possibly prepare you for the second season? I mean,
finale I watched twice because it was so spectacular.
I mean,
I was weeping.
Sadistic nuns in an insane asylum. Okay, I'm already on board, but let's throw in a little demonic possession and a UFO abduction plot. Oh, and a Nazi.
And
an escaped Nazi doctor.
And taking the Catholic Church and ripping it to shreds. I mean, it had everything I loved in it.
I know people that wouldn't watch it because they said I was brought up Catholic and this is too fucking much for me. The Jessica Lange character is like, I can't deal with it.
And the priest.
Oh, man. And the priest, but I love James Cromwell, right?
Yeah.
The Nazi doctor.
The Mangala doctor,
And, of course, all the women are absolutely amazing.
It's all about the women. It's all about the women.
It has been, right? I mean, Asylum was about, and Coven was about the women too.
Yeah.
It's all about the women. And I guess, what are we thinking? So we watched the first episode. I'm so glad that Kathy Bates is back, and then obviously Jessica Lange. She's just, it's her show.
Oh, and and doing this welcome anachronism of having her as like this sort of Marlena Dietrich singing. You know,
so Life on Mars.
Doing this glam rock thing.
Well, she sang. Let's not forget, she sang The Name Game in Coven, which was
also an acronym.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it was this wonderful delusion, but this was like when she came out, and I hear that opening.
By the way, so after I guess you posted on Facebook, Barbara Streisand. Singing Life on Mars.
Yeah, that
was... Which is like, okay. I'm not a big Barbara Streisand fan. Yeah. I want to like her. She's a nice Jewish girl from Brooklyn. You know, I just have a feeling that if we were hanging out together...
Oh, no, I would never want to meet her.
I don't think I would like her at all.
No,
she doesn't sound
humorless.
Like a terribly nice person.
No, she's not. No, I would never
I think on The Smoking Gun, her rider for her contract, for her performance contract rider, and all the toilets in her backstage area must be filled with Avion water and covered with rose petals.
She flatulent or something?
I don't know. She can't poop into anything that's not purified water covered in rose petals.
She's horrible. She's like she's not a good person, but her voice is unparalleled.
Well, she's a perfectionist, and that's sort of her whole thing with singing. And I've enjoyed. I liked What's Up, Doc? And
I have loved many things that she has done, and I have loved. I mean, nobody sings Bert. there are certain songs that she owns. She just owns.
The record that Life on Mars is, I think it's called Butterfly.
Yes.
And it was produced by John Peters, which she was married to. I looked it up.
There's a fly in a stick of butter.
It's unfucking believable. It's like the worst fucking concept of all
It's the
time.
Worst.
It's the worst. And she was married to John Peters at the time. He produced this record. And she covers like a couple of rock and roll songs. It's a weird, bizarre record. She says it's the worst record she's ever made. She's been
Oh, it's awful. And then, I think it's on her album Barbara Jones Streisand, where she covers Mother by John Lennon.
Oh, man.
And it's just psycho.
Oh man. Okay, I'm going to look that up.
You have to. It's psycho.
Barbara Streisand. Back to American Horror Story, though. So we've got a two-headed woman.
Which is Sarah Paulson again. She's like... Just fucking nails it.
Yeah, she's...
Can I say that on...
Yeah, absolutely. Just nails it.
No, fucking.
Oh, on this show? Yeah. It's not only tolerated, it's encouraged.
Yeah, Cara. I mean, and she's apparently singing a duet in the next episode.
With herself?
With herself.
This is great. Not
the Chandler sister.
Not since Rosie Grier, the incredible two-headed transplanter. Two-headed thing is really amazing. And
she's flirting with, like, lobster... Fist fucking boy.
OMG. Okay. That was like, you're getting the rare OMG, like in genuine awe.
Yeah.
When I saw Lobster Hand, like, you know. Digitally.
Manipulating many sexually frustrated women.
Fucking, let's just say it, you know.
Finger banging.
With her finger banging. Yeah. With the ultimate, like, I'm going to have to go watch that again and learn some technique. I mean, Lobster Boy was all set. I hope
he's washing his hands between.
They were just lined up. All the housewives of Eastwick were just lined up.
Yes, I was looking over at Meredith, my wife, and we were like, wow, they have to have a latex.
Horror Story. That's why I love it, because like, wow, you're really gonna go there?
Yeah.
You know, like,
there's no place they won't.
You're
go.
Really gonna go there? You know, or you're really gonna like with the Nazi doctor and like chopping off the legs or whatever it is or. It's crazy. Hannibal too. Like every time there was, you know, this like unbelievably grisly murder and, you know, this. You know, the way it was displayed, I mean, so gorgeous and beautiful. It's like so painterly, but like really hectic. It's like, wow. I mean, there's always like a one holy shit moment on Hannibal, like there is on American Horror Story. It's all like, whoa.
Well,
really?
Like, how about like the intro, like when Jessica Lange's character first meets the Tatler twins and she's asking her right away, like about their sex life. Had they, you know, have they had sex before? And do they masturbate? And like one head is like, don't say anything. And the other head is like,
she
well,
secretly enjoys it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, there's a nice, like, you know, entree.
And I understand next week we're getting a three-boobed woman.
Yes, a hermaphrodite with three breasts. So we've got two heads and we've got three breasts.
And you know,
it's Angela Bassett.
I always like to say, if I had five penises, my pants would fit like a glove.
Nice.
It's hard to segue that joke, Harris. So I got to use every chance I get.
We got the math.
Unbelievable. Before we got this, and we've flown by, we haven't even taken a break. This has been, it's always the fastest half hour on the internet, but man, we are flying today. I wanted to talk for 1 second about Black-ish a little bit. You're more Black-ish than I. You live in a mixed-race household. I am Jewish and barely clinging to it.
Yes.
And
I am also Jew-ish.
But I empathize with the character. I mean, I
like
this.
Oh, I totally do. I actually really... I think it's a good show. I wish the casting, I found the actors a little more appealing, but I think that the concept is great and I think the writing is really good.
Well, it's weird because they do feel, I mean, they feel more like a white family than the fucking Cosbys. I mean, that show was a real turnoff, you know, the sweater wearing Dr. What was it? Dr. Huxtable.
Dr. Huxtable, yes.
Right? Bill Cosby, since he's stopped doing like the 60s stand-up, always seemed kind of smarmy to me, kind of a little too impressed by himself overall. And boy, oh boy.
And a moralizer. Which in 30 Rock, they made a big joke, Tracy Morgan made a big joke about where he had, he was sort of policing other Black comics. About
that's right.
Their
Working Blue when he came down on Richard Pryor. What did Richard Pryor say? Tell that motherfucker to shut.
Yeah, something like. That.
I really don't need Bill Cosby being my dad.
Yeah,
and I loved when I was a kid when I first discovered pot. We discovered my friend Eric's dad had a George Carlin record and a Bill Cosby record in there with the Bob Dylan and you know and the Stones and all this other stuff that was like kind of like you know wow to us because we're 14 and just discovered smoking pot. And I love Bill Cosby telling stories about like growing up in Philadelphia and playing Buck and you know, he was just a great storyteller and I learned a lot of riffs from him. But he became. I don't know, like you said, being a cop. I don't like cops.
I just hate when anyone polices anybody. Anyway. Like, you know, there's a lot of PC. Like, I feel like the PC era has reared its head once again for the first time since the late 80s.
You know, I don't want to say that. We're running out of time, but I'm going to break a rule and go in a couple extra minutes with you. I was, you know, I watched Louis C.K. in his stand-up act. Uh-huh. He's talking about, like, jerking off on a playground.
Yeah.
He's talking about all this dark shit that's in his head. And
but, you I know, love him.
And
I love
the
that
PC
man.
Police are out there. I think, well, of course, we all think he's brilliant, and his show is great. But a lot of people, I guess, haven't really been paying enough attention to seeing, like, he's talking about fucking kids and this crazy shit, and he's getting away with it. And yet the conversation lately has been, can you make a rape joke? Is anything all out of bounds? I mean, what can you talk about it? And he shows you that you can. My mentors like Al Goldstein and guys like Larry Flint, who taught me that you could do anything as long as it was funny.
Yeah. And, well, Joan Rivers said that.
I love Joan Rivers so much.
Me too.
I would have fucked her last week. I mean, I always had it.
Well, you know, Louis C.K. had a whole thing about him.
I loved her for doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he had a whole thing where he's like hits on her. After she gave him all this really important advice.
And she drags him into the bedroom. She's like, oh, come on, go for it. Yeah. And he's like, well, and he goes for it.
Yeah.
God bless them both.
Yeah.
Well, she's to be missed. And before, we're running out of time.
We didn't even get to Transparent.
Well, you're going to have to come back. We have to talk more.
Yeah, we have to talk about Transparent.
I mean, I've got this whole list of things I want
to talk about. Because I freaking love that show.
I love it, too. And I really, there's a lot to talk about. Yeah. That is the more Jewish show. That's the most Jewish show I've seen, actually.
Ever.
Yeah, ever.
The most genuinely Jewish show.
Like, for real.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just about, it's about transitions of every kind, not just Mora, but everybody's having a midlife in that show.
That's what you're saying. It's like, really, it's like everybody is...
in crisis. Before he even tells them that he is a she, they're all in their own, you know, they're all stewing. all in it.
It's sort of... Yeah, sort of like the corrections all grown up.
Exactly.
Anyway, we truly are out of time. It is the fastest half hour
on
the internet today. I promised you it was going to be. The pizza's going to be here any second. But you're going to come back. We're going to talk some more.
Yes,
right?
I hope so. I would love that.
This was awesome. Kara,
was
so
awesome.
Good to see you. Where can everybody find you? And read today's New York Times book review to see your review of Sheila Weller's The News Sorority.
Yes, on DameMagazine.com.
DameMagazine.com. Well.
Where I'm the executive editor.
The executive editor.
Yes.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. The executive editor.
Yes.
Of Dame Magazine.
Yes.
At DameMagazine.com.
That's the one.
Okay. For Kira and V in the booth, Judy McGuire is still out on assignment. Judy, come back. This is Mike Edison. We'll see you guys next week. Going out with Black Flag TV party tonight. See ya.
Thank you for having me.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.